Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You're back inside the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios with Del Olalea
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
Sean and I out here till noon. We're closing out hour one right now. And then Sarge and DJ Bienname will take over for 12-3. Let's get to Pannier. He held through the break. We appreciate it. He wants to talk some World Cup. What's up, Pena?
Hey, what up, Dale? Hey, before I get to the World Cup, I heard y'all talking about Father's Day, so I just wanted to throw out my plan. I will be at Damaris Barbecue on Sunday, and my daughter mentioned she wanted to go watch Toy Story, so we're going to go watch Toy Story on after that. And after the World Cup, look, it's plain and simple. The U.S. is going to win today. We're going to show the Aussies that we're the We speak the better English. We can't take that accent serious. We're gonna win today. We pitch excellence. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. And according to Polymarket, Pulisic has recovered from his calf injury and will be available today. I don't know if that means
the odds.
Play.
The odds say that.
From their Polymarket sports account.
Oh,
they tweeted,
just the account.
They tweeted that out. So I don't know what they know or if they know anything, but they say he's going to play. So we will see. We got actual reporting saying he'll be available as well. So actual reporters, not just Polymarket. So we will see. It looks like, and, you know, Glenn Davis told us this morning he thought he would play. So it looks like Christian Pulisic, according to recent reports, maybe not that up-to-date, but as up-to-date as I can be, the expectation is he will play. And that's good news for the U.S.
Yeah.
And hopefully it is something where he's recovered enough that he can't exacerbate anything. And if they get off to a great start like they did against Paraguay and they're up a couple goals, maybe he doesn't need to go the full 90. Maybe they take him out at the 60 and just preserve him a little bit. And so that's good. I was listening to something during the break, and it'll be interesting to see this play out. And, Alex, I see you. We'll get to you. It was Landon Donovan and Tim Howard talking about Tim Ream. They're discussing what Australia might do to Pulisic and the response. Those two believe that Tim Ream needs to go to the ref right before the match starts and go, hey, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. Australia, the first time Pulisic touches the ball, they're going to smash him. And if you do not give him that player a yellow card, I'm letting you know. The first time their striker touches the ball, I'm going to smash him.
Ooh.
And don't give me a yellow because you didn't give them a yellow. Now, if you give him a yellow and I smash a guy, okay. But I better not get a yellow if when he takes out my guy, he doesn't get a yellow. And Landon Donovan, as a former attacker, said, what's actually going to happen is this. Tim Ream is going to tell them all this. The guy's Pulisic's going to get smashed. The guy's not going to get a yellow. So if Tim Ream does that in response, he shouldn't get a yellow either. So they expect, at least Landon Donovan expects, Pulisic to get the treatment from the Australians and the referee to do nothing about it. That's what Glenn Davis talked about. It all kind of depends on how things will be reffed, whether our most at least the player who will be paid the most attention to, if he's getting beat up, it all depends on the referee. If that's allowed or a couple warnings are thrown out there or it's an immediate, hey, you can't do that one more time and you're catching a card. So that'll be part of the gamesmanship in a couple hours. We will see how it plays out. But from a couple former USMNT players, they think Christian Pulisic is going to get roughed up today. And we'll see how the ref and the rest of the U.S. team responds. But it seems like he'll play. We'll see as we get closer to match time. if that happens. Let's get to Alex here, and then we'll go to break. He wants to talk some Brendan Sorsby. What's up, Alex?
Hey, Dell. Yeah, everybody's talking about Brendan Sorsby betting $90,000, but nobody's asking how well he did on those bets. So why isn't that being talked about? I think we should at least give him credit where credit's due. I'll hang up and listen.
Well, we don't know how well he did. Do we know if he won? We know he spent a lot of money. Do we have any evidence that he was a winner?
I mean, the records have to be there. Like, yeah. the same records that tell you how much you bet. Like, that is on, I don't know, literally a piece of paper somewhere, but that is, like, that the whatever, whoever flagged it also knows that information.
That's true. Alex, I have not seen anywhere where
did he win?
Where Brendan Sorsby was a big win. I guess we could know some of it if we know the game. He bet the under on Indiana passing yards while he was on the roster. We would know if he won that bet,
yeah,
because there is actual record of what they're on. He bet on obscure soccer matches.
Yeah, it's like Turkish basketball.
Yeah,
like.
So we don't have any real clarification of whether he was a good gambler or a bad gambler.
I think he also did like next ball or next pitch ball strikes at Guardians games when he was there. Like,
so a pure sicko.
Yeah,
Sorsby,
it's a lot of stuff where you're like,
oh man, he's got like I know he's playing the rehab thing for maybe sympathy or a way to be able to play as to show he's trying to get better. But he probably needs to be there.
Yeah, he definitely isn't. I don't know. He's not doing it by the book. I would say. I don't think people are like, "Yep, good way to handle things." It is. I don't know. There's no way he was good. I'm sorry. There's no way that he was.
I don't think he was an expert gambler.
An
no.
Awesome gambler.
No, because I think an expert gambler, even though you may have the inside information on your own team,
you're not as reckless.
Knows not to do that.
Yeah.
Knows not to bet on your own team. Why? On things. Now, maybe he was great and just had the hubris to think he would never get caught. But I'm going to assume the 20-something-year-old quarterback, and he was actually younger than that when he was making those bets. He was, you know, using other people to make your bets. There's a lot of recklessness. I'm going to go bad gambler, Brendan Sorsby.
Yes, and I think I'll be the first one to make this joke that if he was betting on pre-Indiana Cignetti, he probably wasn't doing so well, you know? I don't think anyone's pointed that one out.
Well,
oh wait,
he was
asked?
Betting on unders pre Indiana Cignetti.
Oh, I thought he was betting like
he bet on under passing yards.
Oh, I thought he was betting like I thought he was doing the Pete Rose like
no.
I'm only betting like on my
no,
team that like, on them.
That was another part of it that people have kind of glossed over. He bet under passing yards on his own team.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so
I just assumed that he was supportive.
So he was actually
he was hating on.
So he was actually self-aware. At least he knew his team wasn't very good. So maybe he was a better gambler
maybe,
than I thought.
Yeah, then yeah. Maybe he was good.
Yeah. So yeah, that's part of this whole thing that seemingly didn't get a lot of attention paid to it. That he was betting for his team to fail. That's what he thought would happen. As opposed,
to just to move up the depth chart. You know,
or hey, we're going to run the ball. You could play it that way. This team has a bad rushing defense. We're just going to run the ball. We're not going to pass the ball.
That makes it better for you know. If I'm that starting quarterback for Indiana in 2021 or two or whatever, it also makes it worse in the, like, you know, the immorality of it. Of, yes, this is why it's illegal to do this.
Yeah.
It's because he has inside information of the game plan and can exploit that.
Yeah, Tech didn't seem to have a problem with it. And
I watched the 20-minute. I didn't watch it.
I know it went for 20-something minutes. I know people made the jokes about it. I can't believe a large number of people sat through those 22 minutes. Maybe
I think only reporters did.
Yeah, because they needed to pick and choose what they wanted to talk about. Maybe some tech people as well. All right, we'll go to break. That's hour one done. Hour two coming up. I saw people head up to the promo table and sign up. They wanted a chance at that $500 gift certificate from Republic Boot Company. Don't miss out on that. The gift certificate will be given away at 5:30, so you got plenty of time to get here, sign up, and also you don't have to be here. When the winner is chosen, we'll let you know if you've decided to head out. All right, hour one done, hour two, when we come back here at East River 9. Sean and I till noon. We will be back. When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind. It was time. We start hour two. We close out with a couple calls. I will tell Pena that perhaps don't use Australians' funny accents as a reason why we're going to win. If you hear some of the U.S. players talk, you're going to get a little surprised. We have two players. Well, let's break it down. Anthony Robinson grew up in England. Balogun grew up in England. Serginho Dest grew up in the Netherlands. Malik Tillman grew up in Germany. They all have accents that are representative of where they grew up.
I was surprised when I first heard Malik Tillman talk. I will, because Malik Tillman sounds like the name of like a defensive end for Florida State.
Sure.
You know, like that. I'm like, oh, he's one of these kids.
You can hear Balogun and go, okay. You can hear the last name Dest, okay.
Yeah, Serginho is like, yeah. Okay, there's something.
Even Anthony isn't how we traditionally say or spell Anthony. So, yeah. Okay, maybe there's something there. But Malik Tillman, yes, would profile as an very American name. He grew up in Germany, Pena.
Right.
So if he is the man of the match or you hear him interviewed after the game against Australia, trust me, there will be an accent. So let's not use accents against the Australians.
If anything, we'll use against them, we'll use the way they use the C word against them. They let it fly way too much.
Yeah, yeah. It is. Hey, have some.
And that's our superiority.
Have some decorum.
Yeah,
please.
Respect.
Yeah. So hopefully Malik Tillman will be one of the men of the match or the man of the match.
Yeah,
so we'll get
that'd
to,
be great.
We'll get there. That means that U.S. had a pretty good afternoon, and they walk away with the win. So that kicks off at 2:00. And as I mentioned in the previous segment, the big news appears to be that Pulisic will be at least available. We'll see if he starts the match. Okay, remember at 11:30, Michael Carroll will join us, and so we'll get a breakdown of what you should or shouldn't watch this weekend, whether it be in theaters or at home. I didn't see anything where Michael went to see a premiere this weekend or this week. So maybe it'll be a little different. Did he go somewhere?
I think
this week?
He saw something yesterday.
Okay,
I forgot what it was because you know. I just tuned out when he starts. Yeah, he starts talking.
Michael. No,
save it for the show, buddy.
Yeah. Segment your time for the
but
show.
But I'm not sure if it's something that comes out this week or next week. I've honestly completely forgot.
Okay, so when Michael Carroll joins us, I'll ask him about that, if he's got another review of something he saw this week.
I'll try to pay attention this time.
You might want to do that. that might be helpful to the show. But beyond that, we can move to some basketball. You know, the draft is here on Tuesday. The Rockets don't actually have a pick in the first round, so it's not that there's not that much importance being placed on it as far as we're concerned. But there is just some NBA news to get to. And apparently Kat wasn't thrilled with the Knicks before the year because they didn't offer him that max extension. So he's apparently still furious with them after not getting a deal from them. So while, yes, you win a championship, it's all good once you win a title, except when you have the memories of the team,
yeah,
maybe in your eyes, disrespecting you. So that was interesting to see that. And you hear these things come out after seasons. Normally the rumors or speculation, that notebook that a reporter writes and puts out that they say for after the season, it'll come out and you'll hear all the things that maybe you can say, well, that explains why things didn't go the way we wanted to this year.
The dirty laundry being aired after the season.
And then if you're a fan, you're wondering why your season was disappointing, you can go, oh, I didn't know that was going on.
Because this guy's being selfish.
Apparently, Kat was able to overcome it and help his team win a title, but he wasn't thrilled with how the Knicks handled a potential contract. It doesn't mean he's going to go anywhere, but not all is right. In the world with the New York Knicks.
I think it's more likely that, if you're James Dolan. Although, I don't know. If you're James Dolan, I would do a lot of things differently than James Dolan. But if I was James Dolan and I've been a terrible owner for, I don't know, 20 of the 25 years I've owned this team, it's really the last five where he's kind of picked it up a little. I think I'd just resign literally everyone who's on this team. Like, just lock them all up for, like, especially Kat, someone who, for the first two games was getting a little bit of rub as the finals MVP, and really until the last two games of the series had a very good series, then some of the old Kat foul trouble stuff kicked in there. But I don't know. I feel like this is he's of the level where it's like, just take care of him. Although, as someone who's been trying to tear apart the Knicks at every turn.
From within, yeah.
Yes, because I think all their players are good, and I'm like, you could probably be a little higher in the pecking order on a different team. Carl Towns, you want to be the Finals MVP next time? Hey, the problem is no one has cap space.
No.
You want with the Knicks? How about the Nets now?
He would be the number one in the Nets. Now, that whole Finals MVP thing is a different story.
Couple more steps. They need a couple more moves after that.
So he hasn't gotten over not being extended, and now
that's
crazy. He is eligible for a 4-year, $272 million. So don't worry about Cat's finances, everyone, no matter
what
happens.
He's doing all right.
He'll get his money. But now the question was, at least the statement by Windhorse was on, does he take a little bit less to keep everybody happy, everyone can get their extensions.
And Jalen Brunson did.
Yeah, that would be the point. The best player on the team took a little less so everyone can get theirs. Would Cat do the same? Or is it, you know, Pat Riley talks about this. Well, he didn't talk about this anymore because people stopped wanting to hear from Pat Riley. But when they did want to hear from Pat Riley, it was the disease of me.
Yeah.
Where you once you've won, then it becomes about me. Now that we've won, I've done all the sacrificing, what about me? So we will see if the Knicks suffer from that. We know James Dolan has said, I ain't writing this second apron check, so that would require these guys to take less.
How do you not at least lie about that in the first week after winning the first
once
title in 50 years?
Once you win a title, even though everyone, until you did it, thought you were one of the worst owners in sports, and some people thought you were just a bad guy. Ask Charles Oakley about that. But now if you won, it's like carte blanche to be like, you know what? My way works.
Yeah, double middle fingers to everybody.
I don't know if you just saw, but my way won a title. Well, he'll be able to point at that for people who, well, no one can see Sean. He's not on the street.
Oh, yeah.
But Sean pointed up to the rafters like a banner had just been hung. He'll be able to do that in October when they unveil it. But for the moment, yes, he can go, my way works. I'm not changing. And look, the second apron is a giant impediment to being able to make moves, and it's but for Dolan, this is more about, I don't want to pay the extra cash at the second apron.
Even though, do you know how much Knicks merch how much money he's gonna make off of Knicks 2026 champions T-shirts and jerseys and commemorative whatevers?
Yes, I get what you're saying. And sure, a rich person like Floyd Mayweather loves to spend money.
Yeah.
But a lot of rich people don't like spending their money.
That is true.
And in that way, they stay rich outside of taking advantage of their employees. But for some rich people. But
never James Dolan. We would never accuse him of that.
No. He just ruins relationship with former employees who were actually, I don't know if he was the owner when Charles Oakley was the owner, a player for the Knicks.
But either, I think he messed up.
But either way, upsetting former
a
Knicks
legend.
Yes.
Even though, like, Steve Novak was introduced as a Knick legend during the finals. But Charles Oakley,
we're not
that guy.
Yeah.
Speaking of James Dolan grudges, a little bit insight from Rich Eisen. Multiple requests for Knicks players to be available to join the Rich Eisen show. Big Knicks fan. On ESPN Radio, denied because of some comments said because of some comments he made back in the dark days of being a Knicks fan, where he was like, basically, James Dolan, sell the team, sir. You're a bad steward of this once great franchise.
So let's take Rich at face value and say what he's saying is true. He made some comments, whether he got word from the Knicks that those comments.
They just have been denied availability
all the time.
Everyone else has gotten every Knicks player.
Yeah, yeah. They were doing the world tour, and he wasn't able to get them. So let's say he's right, and he's being blackballed by the Knicks because of what he said. How do you think that works? Is there a memorandum sent? Rich Eisen is excommunicated?
Oh.
Or is it understood?
Like John Wick? Is excommunicado?
Is it written someplace that no Knicks can join him? Is it understood that Dolan came down one day and said, if that MF for Rich Eisen ever asked for a player, the answer is no, and everyone's remembered it. Or is it written down someplace like Rich Eisen's stamped on the wall, persona non grata?
I think he gets a very milquetoast email, or his booker gets a very milquetoast email, And I think at Knicks HQ, wherever it is, there is a Mr. Dolan's enemy list that's like in in Billy Madison. He's and with Rich, Steve Buscemi.
And Rich hasn't done enough not to get off of it.
Yeah. Thank God I was nice to that guy.
Yeah. So it's Oakley, Rich Eisen apparently. Yes. Who else belongs? Well, he didn't appreciate Mandani pretty much. He didn't really want to take a photo, but that might be for a different reason.
Yeah,
so I don't know if he ranks high on the enemy list, but maybe not in the whole I'm going to take a photo with you list. I'm not going to do that. But I think Eisen's on it. Oakley's on it. I would imagine RIP to this man, but I imagine David Stern was on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, James Dolan recently has been noteworthy where basically every time the league wants to like hold a vote with the owners and stuff,
he's the one guy he's
always like whatever the league wants, he's like F that.
Yeah. So it may be he may not even have a commissioner by name. It might be NBA head office.
NBA head office.
They're just out. Yeah. So sorry to Rich Eisen and sorry to you guys, because Rich Eisen could have had OG Anunoby, who's very personable. No one can see my face, but silence is what OG.
Once you soften him up a little, and if he's not violently under
high, under the influence, sure, of whatever
at
substance,
7 in the morning,
yeah, whatever it might be, OG Anunoby wouldn't have been a great time for anyone because he doesn't really do much except ball out.
Yeah, get one of the Nova boys. Get Josh Hart.
Hart would have said something. Josh Hart's very self-aware. He said earlier this week that I'm a good basketball player, but if I'm a one or a two, that team ain't going to be very good. But if I'm a four, we're a good team.
Yeah, we're championship.
Yeah.
And he said, and then he like circled back. He was like, again, though, if I'm one or two, get the lottery numbers ready.
Yeah.
get ready for the lottery.
You love a self-aware champion, and that's what Josh Hart is. As the Knicks they had their celebration yesterday. You had a man be resuscitated. That went viral. He woke up.
Watch the Sandlot.
Yeah, he woke up and tried to kiss the woman who was helping to resuscitate him. Apparently, he overdosed. They had to use Narcan to get him back up and about. So there was a life saved. We saw a man put a woman's foot in his mouth. There was a lot going on as the Knicks celebrated their title.
Yeah, a lot going on in New York City.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, our two examples are both
not great. Well, I don't know how that woman. Either she enjoyed it, I don't know. It might have been great for her, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was aggressive if you didn't see the video.
She didn't jerk her foot back,
It wasn't like he had to hold it there. She was willing to allow him to do it. It was a sight. A lot of things went on yesterday, including the Knicks celebrating their world championship. All right, we'll go to break with that. We got one more second to go before Michael Carroll joins us. You guys can certainly get in at 713-780-3776.
You're back inside the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios with Del Olalea
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
Just a couple minutes here. It'll be a quick one because we're due to be joined by Michael Carroll right around 11:30. He is the host of Comicast. He talks movies. He talks television. He talks pop culture. And he'll join us at 11:30 to get us up to date on what you should or shouldn't watch this weekend. The big one, at least in my eyes, and is that Sunday night prestige television time slot that is HBO, because House of the Dragon is coming back. And some of the reviews are in of Episode 1. It will be, for those who forgot, the end of Season 2 was supposed to be a build-up to a giant a war episode, and we did not get that. There's some speculation about why, but that episode, or at least that event, this giant sea battle, will be how Episode 1 of Season 3 not just begins, but what it'll focus on. And from what I can tell, from some people who have seen it, some of the reviewers, some of the critics, they're locked in. This episode got them locked in for season 3.
Restored that feeling.
Yeah, so we're going to get a big battle. You're going to see dragons, you're going to see and you're going to see giant CGI boats. You're going to see it all. And we'll see who comes out on top of at least in the first episode and how it shapes the course of the season. So I'm excited excited about that. And Michael Carroll will give us more things to watch. That's my recommendation. He may not agree. I imagine he will.
But he'll get mentioned.
But if he doesn't agree, just know he's wrong on this one. That's all. That's all. Okay. So certainly a lot of World Cup discussion to be had, and part of FIFA's World Cups is what it does to the economies of the countries hosting, and how much FIFA takes from these events. So, according to, let's just say this is a verified account that knows what they're talking about. We're just going to assume, and because this segment is short, I'm not doing the research to make sure they're right or not. This World Cup hosting cost is $8 billion. $8 billion for the U.S., Mexico, and Canada combined. That is the cost of hosting a World Cup. $8 billion. Qatar, $220 billion to host
a
World Cup.
There's a lot more infrastructure that had to be. You know, SoFi Stadium was just sitting there for the
all
U.S.
What stadium was it? Arrowhead had to make some changes to make sure the field was wide enough that they moved some seats around. But as you mentioned, all of our stadiums over here, we didn't have to build the brand new stadiums to make it work. And imagine the cost of building something in Qatar, quite expensive. So
save on labor.
Allegedly. True. Allegedly. That is what we can allege. We have no evidence of that. Imagine the Qatari lawyers are much like Phil Mickelson's lawyers. So we're just going to say allegedly on everything. And, in fact, with Phil Mickelson, not even mention the story on the
show. Actually, we'll just stop talking about Qatar.
Yes, just like we don't mention Phil. You do that at your own risk, considering what he may or may not be involved in.
Or $200 billion.
$220 billion. Russia, $14 billion. In Brazil, it was $15 billion. That was another one of the countries that built stadiums.
Yeah, they had to build stadiums that are now dilapidated.
That are now dilapidated and not taken care of. And then Germany, only $5.2 billion. Now, we're going back to 2006, so, of course, costs have changed. And that goes for 2010 in South Africa. But the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, with stadiums that were already there, and certainly, as I mentioned with Arrowhead, changes had to be made, a cost of $8 billion, and FIFA is certainly going to get their cut. I don't know. We think the financial impact of these things is we assume, because it's a big event coming to town. Like, bars will benefit. Certainly, Boston has a boon because of what the Scots are doing there.
Yeah.
But the money is always a factor, and it does cost.
I think they've done a good job with I know this wasn't intentional, or at least I don't know how intentional you can make it for every team. Obviously not that much, because there's a draw for the groups. I feel like they've been smart about where they put teams, like I'll at least say America, because I'm more familiar with that, of like, you know what, let's put the Scots in Boston. You know, that seems like a good, you know, let's put the Iranians in L.A., the home of the most Iranians in the world outside of Iran is Los Angeles.
Yeah,
I think there's 250,000 Iranians that live in Los Angeles. Yeah, their first match, let's put it there.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, let's put Australia playing in Seattle, so at least it's a West Coast, West Coast flight for any fans that want to get there. Like, I think there is, like, some intentionality that, you know, Brazil, let's have them in New York, in the Mecca of basketball, but still.
Sure.
But let's have, like, a big, you know, one of the biggest brands of the sport playing in near New York.
And to your point, they put Ghana in Toronto, and they said there's a population of 50,000 Ghanaians.
Wow.
In Toronto.
I didn't know that.
So that was said. So, yeah, while FIFA has its problems, but as this tournament, I think I said earlier this week, it's supposed to be about being an ambassador for the game. That's why they have these mandated community events for the teams and as far as their home bases are concerned. And, yes, why wouldn't you put, if you can make it happen, put these teams in places where, whether it's the people traveling from abroad to come watch them or their diaspora, people who simply are in this country, and you have a high population of them in a certain spot, put them there. So put the teams there so the people who follow these
can
countries
support
can
them.
Support
yeah.
them in a way that's meaningful.
Even Germany playing their first game in Houston, you know, a lot of German ancestors of Germany, I mean, whatever, 7 to 10, you can hear one of them, in the state of Texas. Now, that's more like central, hill country, but, you know, it's drivable for them to come watch Germany play, watch the motherland play.
Is it the fatherland or the motherland?
I think it actually depends on if you're talking about your mom or your dad. But I just, you know, I support women. So I said motherland.
I'm going to let you sit with that and go to break. We're going to go to break.
Sorry, I'm not a patriarch. I live in a patriarchal society.
You do live in one, but you're fighting against it.
Yes.
Because you're an ally. Sean Mapes, ally to women everywhere. Get at him. We'll go to break with that. Michael Carroll will join us. He'll talk movies and television, and maybe he can tell us how much of an ally he is when we get back.
And action!
It's Friday, and so you're probably wondering, what am I going to watch this weekend? Besides all the sports, of course. If you're not sure if you should go to the theater or stay home and binge something, we got you covered on the Del Olalea Show. Time to talk about what you should be watching this weekend with Del Olalea, Sean Mapes, and some guy named Michael Carroll.
Some guy is back in studio along with AJ. Sean and I are here at East River 9. We'll wrap it up here at 12, and then DJ BNMA and Sarge will join you and take you to 3, where Jeremy and Joe will follow. Michael's the host of Comic Ass. He does that podcast with John Lee. How you doing, Michael?
I'm good. How are y'all out there at East River 9?
We're doing well. It's a place filling up as, of course, there's golf with the U.S. Open and no golf here as well, and then the World Cup will get started in about an hour and a half.
Are but you and you, Sean going to play some pickleball while you're there?
No, Michael. I've been here since 6:30, so I'm going to go right home after the show. But I appreciate you asking.
And Raheel isn't here to peer pressure me or anyone to play. So no pickleball. I don't think anyone affiliated. Actually, I can say with 99% certainty, no one with ESPN 97.5 will be playing pickleball today.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And Raheel's the enemy anyway, so it doesn't matter anymore.
Stay on that side.
Stay on that side.
I've never wanted Raheel to hear something more than right now, because I want him to call in and be like,
well, he can't. He's 6'10 pilled now, so he can't hear anything.
Yeah.
But Texans talk.
Yeah, he's too busy looking at the depth chart to
trying to find out which backup guard, like Evan Brown, how many snaps he's going to get this season.
No, you know what you don't get here is that. You get you get us talking about movies and shows and stuff that people care about.
You get Toy Story 5.
Pena told us that's what he's going to do for Father's Day with his daughter. And speaking of things you don't hear on 610, Michael, you want to inform us about what the Book Dragon Festival is? And you went there, so tell us what it's about.
The Book Dragon Festival. I was a part of the event this past weekend at the Post Houston. I moderated the author panel, and then I hung out. And there's so many like local authors that you probably don't realize are all here in Houston or in the greater surrounding areas. So I got to meet for the panel itself, I got to talk to four specific authors and talk about world building and how they set aside their worlds and kind of build them from the ground up. So I talked to them for an hour and then just kind of hung out, man. It was a lot of fun, and there were so many great vendors. I also had sourdough cookies. Never had that before, which was freaking phenomenal. So highly recommend Toast and Tales on that. But, yeah, it was a fun experience. I got to talk about it a little bit more on Comic Cast this week, as well as what we've been watching.
An author of one of my favorite book series was a Rice professor. I don't know if he still is, Justin Cronin. I feel I'm a little bit in line with you, because he spent time here, but he was an English professor and he does live in Houston. And his series eventually got turned into a his book series eventually got turned into a TV show on Fox. It didn't go great because they didn't do a good job of adapting it, but he wrote The Passage, The 12, and The City of Mirrors, so I think he still lives here. I don't believe he was there, but there are great artists, or excuse me, great authors in the city of Houston who write great stuff. All right, Michael, that's what was on your latest issue of Comic-Cast. As I mentioned, you do that with John Lee. What about what's coming up this weekend? Or what's already been released this week? We got plenty to discuss, movies and television wise. What's up first?
I guess I'll start with the movie that I've seen that's releasing this week, and that's The Death of Robin Hood. I saw that last night. Of course, this is a the synopsis reads, grappling with his past after a life of crime and murder, Robin Hood finds himself gravely injured after a battle he thought would be his last in the hands of a mysterious woman. He is offered a chance at salvation. This, of course, stars Hugh Jackman as Robin Hood, Jodie Comer and Bill Skarsgård, as well as a few others. This one's interesting, and I'm probably going to get flack from people because last week, you know, I didn't love Disclosure Day because it was very slow. It moved at a very plodding pace. This one, while the second and third act are slower than the first act, much slower, and it does kind of plod its way through, I still enjoyed it overall. The problem I had with Disclosure Day was I was not invested in the characters. In the first act of this movie, Death of Robin Hood, I was completely invested. It is it's shocking what happens in the first act of the movie. Violent, gory, it's brutal what happens. And that's when it hooked me in. But then the rest of the way, it takes its time with the story. It's more focused on character, and that's where it may lose people. Like, literally in my screening, I counted it, 4 people left early. Like about halfway through, once it started slowing down and bogging down. And it's a lot of, you know, that old English speaking that folks may not enjoy. It did enough for me to where I enjoyed it, but I'm not necessarily going to say go rush out to see it. If it's something that folks are interested in, maybe you want to go see it. But it's hard for me to say, yeah, you must watch this movie in theaters. You could probably wait and you'll be fine.
Yeah, from what I could tell, while we know of Robin Hood as he takes from steals from the rich, gives to the poor, this kind of positions him as, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, positions him as not such the heroic figure that past tales have shown him to be. And
yeah,
and I think is, and I know there's the woman in question is, as far as your synopsis, that she is part of the lore as well, and it's a different telling of her relationship with Robin Hood too.
Yeah, and because this is Michael Saranowski is the director and writer for this one. He of course did Quiet Place Day One and Pig with Nicolas Cage. This one is he's loosely basing it off the 17th century ballad of Robin Hood's death, and it takes some pieces of that story and applies it here. But then of course he adds a lot more layers to it. But yeah, Robin Hood in this film is not a man in tights. He's not a fox that's stealing from a rich lion or anything like that. He is a horrible person. And again, it's reiterated in the first act how this is not like your typical Robin Hood story. This is not someone that you should be rooting for necessarily. This is someone that is battle tested and has lost. He's lost the idea of what is true and what is fiction with all the stories that have been told. That's one of the bigger themes of the movie, which I appreciated. I like that aspect to it. I thought it was an interesting thing to where it brings up, but I thought you stole from like the rich and da da da. And he's like, that's what the story's told, but that's not how it happened. But he's done it for so long and he's so lost by the end of his life that he can't recall what actually happened in his life because he's confusing it with a lot of the stories that have been told about his journeys, as well as Little John, played by Bill Skarsgård.
So if you're looking for a dark, dreary tale of a depressed, murderous, yeah, violent Robin Hood,
it's grim.
If you're looking for grim on your Father's Day weekend, we've got this movie for you. And there are some departures from the grimness because, as Sean joked about, there is a Toy Story 5 movie to go watch. So, Michael, you are firmly saying you can stay at home and watch this new Robin Hood adaptation.
Yeah, I would say stay at home. I mean, unless the subject matter like really interested you, I would say stay at home and just wait for it. But, yes, Toy Story 5 is the big one this weekend. That one, by all accounts, has gotten back to what made the first bunch of films successful, because I know I wasn't a big fan of Toy Story 4, but Toy Story 5 seems to be where it's at this weekend, and it was very much the case last night as I saw a ton of people going to go check it out.
So I have not seen Toy Story 4. It's just I didn't get around to it. What's the departure from the first three movies that Toy Story 4 decided to do that didn't work?
It's the Tokyo Drift of Toy Story movies.
What did they try that didn't that they shouldn't have tried?
I think it's just the where the story goes. Like, you know, the first three, it was focused on...
I mean, because in Toy Story 3, I felt like that bear was a slave owner from what I remember. So what did Toy Story 4 do that took them off track? If you remember, he was at least a taskmaster.
Yeah.
So exactly.
Well, dictator, maybe.
A dictator, maybe, if you want to use that.
Dictator of that
vernacular.
Whatever, kindergarten room.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
So what did Toy Story 4 do that was a departure from Toy Story 3?
I was not prepared for slave owner bear.
He had that hat on.
Calvin Candy.
If you remember that hat he had on, it was slave owner coded. That's all I'm saying.
All right, well, now I need to rewatch Toy Story 3 because maybe I saw something different. So I need to, like, really realize what I saw. Toy Story 4 was just a, like, it's fine. Like, it felt like a side story at the end of the day. It didn't, like, Toy Story 3 peaked for me in how it told the story of, you know, Andy and then, of course, the new kid. I think it's Bonnie is the new kid that they are with now. But Toy Story 4 was just like, it was fine, but like I could have, that could have been something for streaming or anything like that. Toy Story 5 feels much more aligned with what we've seen with the previous three films.
So while my remembering of Toy Story 3 may be off, because I don't think that bear wore a hat, I just remember Southern accent that was like, whoa!
Yeah, no, he definitely snapped at one point. I also...
Yeah, he went crazy.
Only watched this movie probably, whatever, 2010, whenever it came out,
yeah.
It's the last time I saw it, but yeah. I remember that bear was...
That bear was...
I mean, the bear was bad.
Yes, it was bad. So perhaps Taskmaster, Dictator is a better way to position the bear. I just felt like, oof. I'm gonna be honest with everyone and myself. I remember the Southern accent, and that got me to Slave Master. I don't think he was actually one, but he was not a good individual. That bear. What was his name again? It was Lots of Huggin' Bear. That was the name of the toy.
I was gonna say Teddy Ruxpin, but yeah, they can't actually do that.
Yeah, they can't actually grab Teddy Ruxpin.
But he was
inspired by. Okay. So those lawyers started drafting an email.
Hold on, let's look into this before we get too litigious. Okay,
Lots of Huggin' Bear.
So at least Toy Story 5 gets back on track. And so hopefully if you're being taken there by the mother of your child along with your children because you're a father and that's the Father's Day gift, it looks like you may be in for a good story as Toy Story 5 will be in theaters. Is that the last thing in theaters, Michael, to pay attention to?
I will say there is another one. It's limited release this weekend, so it may be difficult to find. I don't know what to make of it because it's a weird trailer. Starring George McKay and Callum Turner. It's called Rose of Nevada. It looks like the way they shot it, it looks like almost like a theater project or something like that. With the, I think it's like a 16 millimeter, what's it called? Bolex camera that they shot this on. And it's super weird. And when you look at like the genre for this film, it's fantasy, thriller, mystery, sci-fi, horror, comedy. Like, it's all these genres mixed into one. The synopsis is real long, so I won't read it. I just say, go check out the Rose of Nevada trailer and see what you think of that one. The other aspect that really brought it to my attention is that it's currently 100% on Rotten Tomatoes with all critics enjoying it. Normally, that means only maybe 10, 12, whatever it's been. 61 reviews for this film so far, and 100% across the board. This is one to watch if you can this weekend. And I know when I watched the trailer, I was like, I don't know about this. But then something clicked for me about halfway through, and it locked me in.
One of Lance's biggest enemies, Callum Turner, because he was able to marry Dua Lipa. He's in the movie, so Lance probably won't go watch. But maybe you should, considering the review, everyone. We'll go to break. When we come back, we'll do... what's on streaming that you should watch. We got one more segment here at East River 9. Myself and Sean, we're joined by Michael Carroll. We will be back.
You're back.
back inside the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios with Dale Olalea.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Dale Olalea.
Final segment of the show. We're still joined by Michael Carroll, and he is the host of Comicast. He hosts that podcast with John Lee. You can normally hear it on Wednesdays here on ESPN 97.5. You can also hear it wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it be Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen to them, those podcasts, you can hear Michael Carroll and Comicast. All right, Michael, as far as staying home this weekend, maybe you want to stay home. It's hot. You don't want to go out anywhere. You want to be comfortable in your own home. What is there to watch this weekend?
Well, obviously, you mentioned it. I think both of you mentioned it earlier. House of the Dragon Season 3 premieres. I'll get to that here in a second. But best movie of the year, Project Hail Mary, is now streaming on MGM Plus. I don't know who has MGM Plus, so shout out to folks. Shut up, Brian. Brian was shaking his head with about Project Hail Mary. No, shut up, Brian. Project Hail Mary, available on MGM Plus right now. Also, don't listen to Brian.
I think that is a great way to preview or talk about how great Project Hail Mary is. Brian, shut up.
There you go.
That should get you excited. Michael is excited enough about that movie to tell someone to shut up, and Michael's a very nice individual.
Yeah.
So I'm kind. I'm a kind person.
So if he's telling Brian to shut up, I'm a great guy. You
that did have some Stephon Diggs connotation to it.
So, yes, Brian, shut up. Project Hail Mary is great. What's next?
We've now said shut up, Brian, like five times.
I think it's the best thing we've done all day. What else is out there, Michael?
Yeah, well, shut up, Brian. House of the Dragon Season 3 premieres Sunday at 8 Central. Of course, this one seems like we're getting the action right off the bat as the battle. I forget the battle name, but we got the sea battle.
Battle of the Gullet,
Battle of the Gullet is kicking off Season 3. And this season, where like Season 1 and Season 2 were that slow burn, and you did have action, but this season really ramps up the action in major ways, major battles throughout the course of the first episode, two episodes, I think. And it doesn't lose pace, at least according to folks who have seen the first half of Season 3. And it seems to be mounting a really good comeback in terms of that big, epic scenery or battles that you would expect from a Game of Thrones property at this point, outside of Night of the Seven Kingdoms. But yeah, I'm looking forward to Season 3 and when it premieres, of course, on HBO and HBO Max.
Yeah, I believe episode 1 is 72 minutes long. So okay. While the energy is a departure from A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, it's also the length, because we know those are shorter episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're getting a 72-minute episode to start the season, so get excited about that. And it's such a dangerous proposition, because I wanted to make sure I got the name right. So I type in Battle of the Gullet on my phone. And right under that, it's Battle of the Gullet Deaths. And I avoided clicking on that, so just to make sure the episode right. So
yeah.
I've been able to avoid spoilers. I'm good there. What else is out there for people to watch, Michael?
Well, there's three series that I'm not like super familiar with. I know of them, but I've never watched like season one or the first two seasons of one show. I don't know if either of you watch Sugar on Apple TV, but that's back for season two this year with starring Colin Farrell.
I saw season one. I saw a bit of season two, episode one of season two after the Mexico-Korea game. I don't want to give anything away, but there's a mystery. Like, he's a private detective. That's mm-hmm. Colin Farrell's role. But there's also a mystery behind him. And if you've never seen season one, the mystery isn't even the one you think it is. And that's how they get you in the final couple of episodes of season one. And then season two kind of follows along his path of that reveal and how his life is moving forward. But, I enjoyed season one. First episode of season two was kind of a slow get off. We'll see how season two progresses.
Yeah, this one, he returns for a new case, tracking the troubled older brother of an up-and-coming local boxer as his search for his beloved missing sister continues. And as the investigation expands into a citywide conspiracy with sinister intentions, Sugar must reckon with himself to answer the question, how far will he go to do what's right? So that's available for folks who want to check that out on Apple TV.
And for a little Easter egg, Supergirl's in the episode. I think she's in throughout the entire season. Not the current new Supergirl, but yeah. The one from The Flash.
Yeah, Sasha Calle. Yeah.
Sasha Calle's in it. Not playing Supergirl, notably. Just playing a regular old person from Los Angeles. Unless there's a mystery behind her, too. We'll see how that plays
That'd
out.
That'd be a big
I imagine there might be, considering the tenor of the show. So that is Sugar on Apple TV. What's up next, Mike?
There's also, I think you've watched this show, Adele, the Agency on Paramount Plus. Have you seen that one?
I'm trying to think.
That's the one with Michael Fassbender
and
Richard Gere and all that?
Yes, I have seen that. I have and do watch that show.
Well, season 2 premieres this weekend on Sunday, and I don't remember this being the case with the first season, but season 2, all 10 episodes premiere Sunday on Paramount Plus at, 2 a.m. our time? So for folks, if you want to binge season 2 on Sunday, you can.
I don't remember that either. I don't remember that being a full-on drop.
I thought that was a week-to-week show previously.
Considering the star power of Michael Fassbender, and then depending on how people feel about Richard Gere now, not that he's not a star, but he's not to the level of Michael Fassbender is. I did not know. I thought that was they were kind of putting that out week after week to keep people coming back. I don't remember that being a singular drop. So that is interesting.
Yeah, I don't know what the because from all accounts, it's getting good reviews. It got good reviews with the first season. Now I know there was issues in terms of if you didn't have the Showtime addition to Paramount Plus, you couldn't watch it. This one has just been described as being on Paramount Plus, so maybe you can just watch it straight up on Sunday without having Showtime. So maybe that's available for folks, but you know, just check your subscription if you have one. The Agency season 2, all good reviews so far. You can check that out. And then a show that I've never heard of until I started researching for this week. The Capture season 3 premieres on Peacock.
I've seen that show. I've enjoyed watching the first couple seasons.
Yeah, I had no idea. First season premiered back in 2019. The next season premiered
a long time now. Yeah,
yeah. Second season premiered in 2022. It's been 4 years since the previous season, but it doesn't seem to have lost any steam this latest season. 100% with critics right now. And it seems like one I want to dive into. All 6 episodes are available right now, and the previous seasons are also 6 episodes each. So it's an easy watch if you want to check that one out this weekend on Peacock.
Appreciate it, Michael. That just about does it for us with DJ Bianime and Bix and Sarge coming up next, as they'll take you to 3 here at East River 9, and then Jeremy and Joe after that. Michael, the host of Comicast, he does that with John Lee. You can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you, Michael, for joining us.
Hey, you're welcome. Shut up, Brian.
I mean, it really should be a drop at this point.
Yeah. Words to live by.
Yeah. Brian, never. Never talk. All right. Sean, thank you for helping me out today. We got the U.S. versus Australia. That'll be what I'm locked into. And hopefully we're talking about a win when we come back on Monday. Since we're done, once again, I want to thank AJ for helping us out. But since we're done for the day, AJ, what does that mean?
Hey, give me some of that salchicha.
Nice pull. We'll talk to you on Monday.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.